Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Today we're talking about a key part of the body for your outdoor explorations, your brain. New research shows that being active can make you smarter, growing parts of the brain, and keep your brain healthy as you age. But we're also going to talk about brain injuries. We're learning the serious impact they can have on every aspect of life and how important it is to protect your head when you're doing outdoor sports. Later in the show, we'll have a segment from Maine about a young person learning to survive outdoors, and we'll check in on plans being developed by Chugach National Forest for new trails, including a safe pathway along the Seward Highway near Portage and reconnecting the historic Iditarod Trail. Stay with us. It's all coming up on Outdoor Explorer, Alaska Public Media's audio outdoor magazine. Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and my next guest is a returning guest to the show. He was here to talk about single-track trails he helped build in the Mirror Lake area. He's also a physical therapist. Chris Wilson has Ideal Motion Physical Therapy, and the idea of having him on the show today struck me because of the topic that he studied, which is how our physical activity can benefit our brain and our thinking. And Chris, this is something, I mean, obviously you're not a doctor or a neurologist, but this is something you've put some study into about how just being active can be beneficial mentally, which I think a lot of people feel, right?
Correct.
Yeah, do you feel that? Like you go out and on a great bike ride and you come back and you like feel energetic? And I even feel like sometimes sit down and do a crossword puzzle or something and I'm like, well, I'm sharper than I was before.
That's right. You're feeding your brain.
Yeah. So how does that work? I mean, why is that? What's happening there?
Well, there's plenty of research and studies that show that exercise has benefits not just cardiovascularly, but also in reducing symptoms that are associated with anxiety and depression, improve your mood. You're releasing, when you're exercising, especially in an aerobic way, you're releasing endorphins in the brain as well as growth factors, which help build new cells, grow new blood vessels, increase blood flow to the brain, and release all those happy chemicals that make you feel good and happy.
Yeah. Well, I guess it makes sense because, I mean, obviously we don't know how we evolved, but way back when we were probably a lot more active than we are now. It's probably we're made to be active, right? I mean, if you think about people who live, you know, sort of in tribal pre-industrial societies, they're active all the time because they have to be.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so much research to support the fact that we're not made to sit. We're not made to be in one position. Our joints are made to move. Our muscles are made to move. And there's a very simple fact that if you don't use it, you do lose it. So your body is an amazing machine, and it recycles what it doesn't need. And if you're not stimulating the system, it's just not going to be there for you when you want it.
Yeah. So tell me about some of this research that you were talking about related to sort of cognitive decline. And I guess, is that Alzheimer's or...
Yes. So the research and studies that have recently come out, one was sponsored through the Mayo Clinic and printed in the Journal of Neurology just recently, was a study on aerobic exercise showing that if you could exercise 150 minutes a week in a semi-strenuous manner, enough to break a sweat and get your system working a little bit harder, there was a significant reduction, or I should say improvement, in cognitive function for people who had mild cognitive impairment. So mild cognitive impairment is kind of the first stage prior to dementia. Mm. And those who are diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, which is typically one person every 4 seconds.
A lot of people, a lot of older people, a lot of us are getting a lot more older people in the world these days.
But you can slow it down and you can affect it through exercise. There is a, you know, there's a threefold increase that if you get diagnosed with MCI, you may get early onset dementia, but you can, these studies show that you can reduce that chance or at least prolong your function through exercise.
So what, I mean, were we talking about older people or are we talking about everybody?
Typically, and again, this kind of goes into the area that I would have to do more research on, but from the articles that I've read, the studies that I've read, it typically seems to be, you know, around the ages of late 60s and definitely within the early 70s is when you start to see these diagnoses of MCI start to come into play.
Yeah. So you're as a physical therapist, I'm sure you work with a lot of athletes. I'm in my mid-50s now. And I'm now at the point where I can see, well, I can see how people start to be less active as they get to my age because it gets a little harder. You get more sprint, you know, you get more pulled muscles, and but if you don't keep it up now, you're not going to be doing it when you're in 60 or 70, right?
Right.
I mean, you got to keep going.
Absolutely. It is definitely harder to get into the habit of exercise, make it part of your behavior mm-hmm. later in life.
Yeah. And then you get, you know, put on the pot belly and whatever, and then you're never going to get out there and do it.
Right. Yeah. And then you have other health issues on top of that.
Yeah. So is there any other research that you've been looking at in terms of the brain and how, you know, how exercise benefits us mood-wise and all that?
Sure. Well, there was another interesting study that came out of the University of British Columbia that showed, again, moderate aerobic exercise of 150 minutes a week or more actually increased the size of the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is in charge of memory and thinking ability.
Huh.
So obviously, if you can affect the size of your hippocampus, that's pretty powerful. Just through exercise. In fact, it was shown that resistance training, such as lifting weights and trying to build mm-hmm. muscles, didn't have the same effect. So that's pretty amazing. It's easy to do.
That's amazing. So you think of you're building your muscles, but you're building your brain too when you're doing this aerobic exercise.
Yeah.
So what does aerobic exercise mean exactly? Because you said like resistance training might not do it.
Right. So aerobic exercise, you can classify it. There's a couple different systems or ways to classify what is aerobic exercise. But typically, it's when you're out there walking, hiking, or doing something strenuous, it should be challenging to carry on a conversation. When you start to dip from aerobic to anaerobic, which is just a different state of exercise, your physiology changes, you start to be able to only carry on a 3 or 4 word conversation.
And that's when you're really sprinting.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
So you want to kind of be just below that level of exertion, according to these studies, in order to get the benefits mm-hmm. Cognitively.
So you're going to definitely have elevated heart rate. You're
yes.
definitely going to be working. You know, if you're fit, you're probably going to be running or skiing or cycling fast. You're not
right.
going to be strolling along.
Well, keep in mind, the more you do this, more consistent you are, the more you have to work to get to the same level.
Yeah. Or at least faster you go. I mean, you might be
right.
the person who doesn't do anything works very hard just getting off the couch.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's the struggle. That's the hardest part is just getting started. So it's nice if you have friends or a group of people you mm-hmm. can get together with. They help motivate. You help motivate each other.
Yeah.
Or just find something fun. It doesn't have to be, you know, go out and pound yourself into the ground trying to learn how to ski or mm-hmm. do aggressive biking. It can be fun. And even things like mowing the lawn and doing yard work, even chores within the house, you can make it challenging and aerobic.
Yeah. But I mean, one of the things, you know, when you talk about 150 minutes a week, 2.5 hours, to do that, you almost have to find something that you enjoy and that fits in, becomes a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I hear people saying, wow, you're so awesome. You know, you work out all the time. And like, no, not really. It's just that if I don't, I feel bad. I want to work out, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't want to, it's hard to believe you're really going to keep up any habit 2.5 hours a week, right?
Right.
So it's all about finding something you actually want to do and that becomes a part of your life.
That's true. It has to be fun.
Yeah.
But it's 30 minutes 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
30 minutes goes by really fast. Yeah, it's...
I don't know, that couch is very appealing, right?
But I don't know about you, but I find that after you have this habit established, mm-hmm. you start to crave it. You know,
right.
you start to miss
right.
it.
It's like establishing it that's the hard part, but
right.
once you've got it, it becomes a part of your life that is just kind of automatic and you need it. Yeah.
Right.
What do you do? What's your workout?
Oh, well, in the wintertime, I do a lot of fat biking,
uh-huh.
And then I'm very involved with downhill skiing out there at Alyeska. I've got kids in the program out there
cool.
as well. That's kind of my history.
Uh-huh.
But then in the summertime, I'm training now for a triathlon in Hawaii. That's something new for me.
Oh, wow.
So, but I like to run and bike. Those are my main forms of aerobic exercise.
Yeah.
But I like to challenge myself too. You know, swimming is something I never did. And I'm slowly getting better at it, but that's the fun part about mm-hmm. exercise. You try new stuff and you learn a new skill and it gets you jazzed.
Well, yeah, we talked about habit, but the other part of it is having some goals, right?
Right.
Because habit can get boring. And if you just are sort of doing the same thing every day and you don't have something that you're working towards, it can be hard to stick with it as well.
That is true. Yeah. And some people are motivated by spending the money for a membership at the gym.
Right.
Some people, they just, you know, you have to sign yourself up for a race and that's your goal. And that kind of forces you to get out there and train.
Avoid the embarrassment of not being ready.
Right. Yeah.
Although I've read that the gyms will staff up in January and be ready to lay everybody off in February because of all the people who sign up with their New Year's resolutions and don't fall through.
That seems so true.
Yeah. We're talking today about, we kind of started talking about the brain. We're talking about the positive part of exercise and outdoor activity on improving your brain. You can even grow it, as we just heard, by doing aerobic activity. Chris Wilson is with us. He's has Ideal Motion Physical Therapy. So, Chris, you must work with a lot of athletes who have hurt themselves.
I do.
And trying to get them going again. What sort of injuries do you, I'm sure there's a range of things, but what are some of the more common injuries that you deal with?
In regards to athletes, it's probably low back injuries, shoulders, and knees are the most common. There are some trends with some sports that you see. You know, certain sports will have hip injuries that are very common, and other ones knees, and other ones shoulders.
Yeah.
But you never know what's going to walk in the door. So that's what keeps it exciting.
I don't know. Maybe I'm like other people like me, but I'm totally paranoid about hurting myself and not being able to do the activities that I enjoy. I guess I'm really think a lot about how to avoid some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things cause these low back injuries you're talking about? I mean, are those things that are caused by the physical activity, or is that maybe more likely something that's just part of your life that messes you up?
That's actually a tough question to answer because there's so many variations of how you can get injured. Deconditioning is probably one of the most common when it comes to someone who's just entering a sport or learning a new sport. But you can have traumatic injuries, which there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, you fall over or something.
Right.
Yeah, fall off the mountain.
But I truly believe that the healthier your tissue is, the faster your nervous system works, the quicker you can make a muscle contraction and generate more power, the safer you're going to be. It's a protective mechanism that you can design. So regular exercise gives you that strength and ability and function.
I have sensed that myself. You know, when I get into something intensely and practice a lot, I find that my coordination improves in other areas, other activities I do, and that somehow, and I know that muscles sort of recondition fairly quickly as sort of those nerve endings figure out how to fire and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that happens with my mind too, that somehow I get more coordinated, better balance, more focus after I've been practicing, getting ready for a race or something.
And so why is that? You're absolutely affecting the brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what research tells us, and through functional MRI studies and other studies, you're growing myelin in your brain.
Hmm.
And myelin is like the insulation around a wire. The thicker it is, the more efficiently that signal is going to travel from one cell to another and eventually down your spinal cord into your muscles. So you will have more power and speed. Your thinking ability may actually improve because you're improving and increasing the efficiency of how your brain works.
Yeah. Sometimes I think in our society we've started to think of the body as just being a thing to carry the brain around.
Right.
You're really a brain, right? And the body's just this machine for carrying it around.
Right.
And then, like, you're connected to the computer all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And really sort of thinking of the brain and body as one is maybe a key to health.
Definitely. You know, yes, your brain can affect your body, but what you do with your body obviously affects the brain just through release of different hormones and steroids and proteins and all those happy chemicals, the endorphins, growth factors.
Mm-hmm.
And you can control that through movement, through exercise, exertion. But you can also affect that through cognitive training as well, doing little tests and challenges for the brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, getting back to the topic of injuries, we're all sort of, I think, aware of the weekend warrior, the guy who, like, says, well, I'm going to, you know, win the race and hasn't practiced at all. And so, of course, he hurts himself.
Yes.
And that's probably more so as you get older, I would think, because your muscles just don't recover as quickly.
Takes a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do nothing, you do lose muscle mass, and that tends to accelerate slightly as you get older. So it takes more work to keep the system functioning.
Right. And so you want to slowly build into a new activity, not just hit it hard from the beginning.
That's right.
Right.
And, you know, if you're in fair to poor health, you should check with your doctor and make sure that your body and your cardiovascular system is ready to start to take on some strenuous exercise.
What about, you mentioned knees, and again, if you're middle-aged, this is another big worry, and you hear about people saying, there's nothing left down there, you know, and getting knee replacements. Is it true that knees wear out, that sort of the more you run, the more you're going to wear out your knees, or is that a myth?
You know, I don't believe in that. There's one huge variable in that conversation, and that's genetics. Mm-hmm. Some people have really amazing tissue quality, and other ones don't. But I also believe, and I'm sure we could go through some studies and find some evidence to support this, is if you're stimulating your cartilage throughout your lifespan, it's going to be healthier and thus more resilient to exercise. You know, arthritis, big general word, can happen not only from trauma or overdoing it, but also from underdoing it. You know, if you're sitting on the couch and you're not out there running or biking or walking or stimulating your joints, you will lose cartilage density, muscle density. Your ligaments and tendons will get smaller and less tolerant to force. So, you know, overdoing it can be a problem.
But not doing anything is even worse.
Yeah.
for all the reasons you've talked about. Running, you hear a lot about knee injuries and also foot injuries, which can really put a runner out of commission.
Right.
Is there any way to avoid those foot issues? Is it a matter of the wrong shoe, or is it sort of more just the genetics like you're talking about, like some people are lucky and some
aren't? Sure. Training is probably the biggest thing. When I see runners in the clinic, it's usually an overtraining issue, a tendonitis that just doesn't go away, plantar fasciitis, pain in the bottom of the foot that's just plaguing. You do see a fair majority of runners who have chronic pain. I should back up. You may find a biomechanical issue with them, and that's really fun for me because I get to, you know, do a video and put it in slow-mo and watch their biomechanics and try to figure out, you know, what's going on there in their lower extremity and in their foot, and how can I do something to try to normalize their biomechanics.
Change the way they run.
And thus take the abnormal stress and load off those injured tissues.
Interesting, yeah. So it's just because you are having a problem, don't give up. Maybe an expert can help you.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And the more minds you have working for you, the better.
And you mentioned that you're really into cycling. Are there any injuries that are typical to cycling? I mean, other than falling off the bicycle.
Trauma.
Yeah.
Patellofemoral pain or patellofemoral syndrome is fairly common. That's pain kind of under the kneecap. And that can be for, you know, biomechanical reasons, poor ergonomic setup on the bike, muscle, kind of a general term, muscle imbalance. You know, maybe you don't have one particular muscle, for example, the VMO, which is that bigger muscle you see on the inside of your knee, maybe less developed.
I have theories about this which are totally uninformed, so you can stop me from spreading bad information here, but in terms of that knee pain, which I've experienced transiently, I feel like lower gear ratios on the bike help that, so that you're not like, you know, working. I had a really old bike, didn't have a low gear ratio, so going up hill, I was using a lot of force, you know, and that seemed to be putting pressure on my knees. So I guess that seems obvious. What about sort of toe clips or shoes that where you're pulling upwards on the pedal? Is that something that's going to cause more injuries?
I don't know of any evidence that says that it would. I think there's plenty of documentation through the exercise physiology world that if you're clipped in, you're more efficient with your pedal stroke.
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of pedaling squares, you're pedaling circles. And a circle is much more efficient with energy than just pushing down.
Right. And then just being in a low enough gear so you're not putting huge stress on those joints.
Right. And then you get to use other muscle groups such as your hamstrings instead of just relying on your quads and glutes to push that pedal over.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this is fascinating. And I'm especially excited about telling everyone that they get out there and do their 2.5 hours of aerobic exercise per week, and their brain will get bigger.
That's right.
Yeah, and you'll hopefully maybe avoid some of the dementia or cognitive decline in older age. We're not making any promises, but it's better than, you know, you'll be having fun in the meantime.
So I like to tell my clients that motion is lotion and exercise is the fountain of youth.
There you go. All right, thanks. Chris Wilson is with Ideal Motion Physical Therapy out in Palmer, right?
Eagle River.
Eagle River. And also is a single track builder, built a set of trails out there. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you, Charles.
All right, stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. It's Outdoor Explorer. Our next segment comes from Maine, and it was recorded a number of years ago where Maine Primitive Skills School was teaching skills to survive being stuck in the outdoors when you don't plan on it. Sarah Jesse has a story of a girl learning to make it outdoors.
So imagine you're out for a late afternoon walk in the woods. It's fall, and the air's cool, crisp, but you take a wrong turn and you stop seeing the trailblazes that marked your path. The sun's nearly down and the temperature's plummeting. You're stranded, and you've got nothing but an empty water bottle and a vague idea of which berries you definitely shouldn't eat. Would you make it through the night? You might, if you build a shelter.
So first order of business is prop this up, or maybe you can hold this in seam height. So hold it. Like
Mike Douglas doesn't just want you to survive that kind of night. He wants you to embrace it.
Surrender to the landscape. Trust your senses. Make it fun.
That's a little too high, so you want it like...
Mike is the executive director of the Maine Primitive Skills School in Augusta, Maine. This weekend, he's teaching beginning students the skills they'd need to get through a night alone in the woods. Students learn skills like foraging for food and making friction fires. You know, that seemingly impossible task of rubbing two sticks together to get an ember.
Shelter and fire are the two that seem to be this invisible screen that prevents people from feeling completely secure in the woods. Until they get those two pieces, that is an alien world out there, and society is home.
How's the shelter looking?
I'll bet.
One of Mike's students is Katie Schultz. Katie's 15, and she's been coming to the Maine Primitive Skills School for about 3 years.
I'm a student slash volunteer slash apprentice slash whatever, and it rocks.
One of the most important skills students will learn this weekend is building a warm, sturdy shelter. Mike really concentrates on this particular skill, and with good reason. Students will be testing their work tonight by sleeping in their huts. Mike calls these shelters debris huts. To build them, students set up a framework of sticks and branches, and then cover that frame with piles and piles of leaves. The effect is a large, loaf-shaped mound that students have to wiggle their way into, feet first.
That's how it should be. That kind of struggle. If you can zip right in and zip right out.
Mike spends the morning counseling students on how to build their huts ever so slightly larger than their bodies, and to plug every last hole with leaves. Even the tiniest hole could make for a very cold night.
That looks perfect. Yeah, right there.
Oh, slimy.
Katie's one of the five students hoping to make it through the night alone in a debris hut. In fact, she's promised herself she'll tough it out. It's supposed to dip below freezing tonight, and she spent most of the morning plugging up the holes in her debris hut with handfuls of leaves. This seems like an unexpected extracurricular activity for a teenager, but Katie really enjoys spending time in the survival skills community.
You know, a lot of people think we're just tree-hugging hippie freaks, you know, running around in the woods, doing stuff with sticks, you know, sharpening rocks and running around buck naked. But I think it's good to have an understanding of the world in which you were born. Not the world which was created around you. Because this stuff was here a long time, way before skyscrapers and cars and horse-drawn carriages and the wheel. Ooh, that's a good sound. That's a really good sound.
Other students are finishing up their shelters, but Katie's already preparing for the afternoon workshops. Mike's asked her to demonstrate how to make a bow drill fire in front of the class, and Katie's been practicing friction fires with a bow and a spindle all weekend. She just got an ember on her own for the first time last week, and it's still a struggle for her.
No smoke. Oh, well. It doesn't squeak anymore. That was the goal.
The afternoon workshops wind down, and shortly after sunset, the students are making the highly anticipated trip to their shelters for the night. As Katie walks through the woods on the way to her shelter, she seems a little nervous.
I think if I can tolerate it, I will, because I'm not gonna back out of this easily. Do I spy a giant pile of leaves? I think I do.
You'll be fine, or at least you'll be well preserved.
And with that, Mike leaves Katie and the other students to settle into their shelters for the evening. So for Katie, this is what survival skills comes down to. A long, dark, claustrophobic night lying face up, no room to turn over or to curl up. And outside, the temperature continues to drop.
So it's 27 degrees. It's almost 3:30.
Mike's bundled in several layers of wool and his breath fogs in the cold.
I'm going to just quietly move through and see how they're doing, check out their doors if they're closed. This is the coldest part of the 24-hour period. So if they can make it through this, they'll be okay.
Four other students attempted to spend the night outside in their huts.
It's been gone for some time, so we'll see how that turned out.
But of the five total students...
Another empty one.
Katie's the only one who answers Mike's call.
Hey, Katie, are you alive?
Kind of.
Got about 3 hours. How's this going? Are you cold?
Yep.
What part?
All of it.
Your whole body?
Yeah.
Okay, you gonna try to stay for the whole duration?
Yeah.
If you start shivering, come in, okay?
Too late.
The next morning, the students stumble sleepily into the school's main cabin. Katie combs leaves out of her long brown hair as she shares her experience of the night.
So I got in there. After the first few hours, I just started ignoring the fact that I was freezing cold. Because I was just, you know, getting blinded by leaf bits and getting in my mouth and in random places that I didn't think you could get leaves.
More valuable than the mythical self-esteem and even the hard-earned self-confidence is just the knowledge of who you are.
I am not lazy anymore. I've been putting it off for so long, and the fact that I actually just get out and do it, that's the whole point, just to get out and do it.
Now you are the Lorax and speak for the trees.
I'm blood related to the trees now.
That piece came to us from Maine and was produced by Sarah Jesse. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. You know, we talk a lot about sports on our show that involve going fast, from riding a snow machine to skiing, snowboarding, skating, whatever. All of them require, involve some risk. And one of the risks that we're learning a lot more about is the risk of hitting your head and really serious consequences of that. There's been a lot of discussion about that as sort of a consciousness-raising thing has been happening in Alaska this winter. Some of the prevention of it is fairly obvious, about wearing helmets, but some might take some changes in behavior and some changes in how we look at things. So I thought that, wow, this is a safety issue we've really never touched on. So Hannah, our assistant producer, got an expert in to talk about it. So we can kind of go over what are some of the consequences. What do you do about a traumatic brain injury or potential brain injury when you're in the field? And what are the prevention things that we need to be thinking about? And so we have Tyler Hislop here. He's with the Alaska Brain Injury Network. Thanks for being here, Tyler.
Thanks for having me.
So, we're not talking about something we're talking about a really serious thing. When you get a traumatic brain injury, it can change you cognitively, emotionally. I mean, there's a very broad range of consequences, but the consequences can be really, really bad.
Yeah, that's really true. Especially in the outdoors, the consequences of hitting your head can be fairly severe. And obviously, there's a range of effects you can experience. And in the short term, it's hard to tell how severe it may be for someone. And so, especially in the outdoors, I think it's best to err on the side of caution. So that's what we're here to talk about here today.
So I think awareness has grown partly because of the NFL situation, where we've heard about repeated concussions and the consequences of those. And those are situations where somebody has a concussion, but they kind of shake it off and keep going. Bad idea. But also, I mean, you could also hit your head and, you know, die a couple of days later. I mean, these kinds of situations are real, and they've happened around Anchorage when somebody's, hit a tree or something while sledding.
That's definitely true. If someone hits their head, one of the most severe effects can be if they become unconscious afterward. And so that's a big warning sign that they could be more serious. If someone is not unconscious after they hit their head and they seem confused, they may come back to a more conscious state fairly quickly. But if someone becomes unconscious, that's definitely more severe. And like you said, Charles, if someone dies a few days later, usually that's from bleeding in the brain, and that's not something you can detect in the field. So always best to err on the side of caution.
So the current person might seem blacked out and then come to, and you think, oh, well, we can go on. But no, this is really the wrong decision to make. You really need to get that person to medical care.
I think so, yeah. And there's lots of education resources out there for wilderness first aid, for example, or basic wilderness care. And those are all kind of geared around stabilizing the patient and deciding whether or not to evacuate that person if it's severe. And so, being somewhat of an expert, I would say if someone hits their head, just plan on getting them out of there. They may be confused. You can test their awareness by asking them a few questions, things like their name or your name, how many people are in your group, where they are, what day it is, even who is heading up various positions of the government, if you want to get complicated.
Right.
To test their level of consciousness. But I think you should plan on getting them out of there, especially if they become unconscious.
And this is stuff that we need to be learning at the same time we're learning how to deal with a laceration or with a broken leg or something. It's all part of being prepared for extended wilderness travel.
Right, especially relevant here in Alaska. If someone breaks their leg, you can stabilize them and help them to get out of the backcountry. If someone hits their head, they may be confused and embarrassed and want to keep going and so as not to let down the group or something like that. But as a group, it's important to know about how complicated things can get if someone does hit their head. And not just for your friends, but for you as well. So bear in mind, best to just get out of there and try and get them to a doctor.
Yeah. So we do all kinds of sports, various levels of hazard. And we used to wear helmets biking or skiing or doing any of these things. And now progressively we're wearing helmets doing more of them. I remember difficulty I had getting my mother to make the kids wear helmets when they're sledding, but I had actually witnessed a sledding injury when somebody ran into a tree, and boy, it's real, and it's really, really dangerous. Now we're getting into, everybody wears helmets skiing and snowboarding these days, pretty much. That's a new thing of the last 20 years or so, and now more people are wearing helmets skating. So this has been a progression as we're figuring out, like, that this is a serious issue.
Yeah, that's very true. I think especially with the NFL, knowledge of brain injury and research around it is becoming more developed and is a lot more in the public consciousness, which I think is good. Brain injury is not something that's easily treated, and the younger you are, the better the outcome if you are injured, but it's especially important to protect kids. So I know ski helmets are pretty cheap for children, so it's a good idea to send them out into the outdoors with a ski helmet. It can help keep them warm. And sledding is a sport you do move very quickly. And I know at the bottom of a lot of ski hills, people will wrap trees with foam and mats and that type of thing to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to bear in mind. But I like to play hockey too, so ice skating or skiing or rock climbing, ice climbing, always a good idea to wear a helmet. That's your best prevention measure that you can do almost passively. They can be uncomfortable, but there's a lot of different styles out there. Many of them are pretty flashy. Some are more subtle in style. So there's a helmet out there for everyone. I like to think of it as better staying power in the outdoors. So
yeah. So if you're, if you're like me or like a lot of people, you do a lot of different winter sports, you don't necessarily want to have a different helmet for every single thing you do. On the other hand, your bike helmet probably is not going to be the same helmet you use for ice skating.
Yeah, that's true. A bike helmet is something you could use for ice skating. Bike helmets are designed to protect you from the side and from the rear mostly, because that's where you're most likely to hit your head off a bicycle. Whereas a climbing helmet, for example, is designed to protect the top of your head mostly.
Interesting.
To protect against rock fall or ice fall, that sort of thing. So a bike helmet might be a better choice than a climbing helmet, but a ski helmet is going to be a good choice too, because it's going to keep you a little warm. And
what's the protection on a ski helmet? Just all the way around, or?
Yeah, ski helmets are designed to protect against some penetration, like if you crash into a tree or something like that. They drop test them from various heights, and they're designed to protect the side and the back of the head, and to a small degree, your spinal column in the back of your head.
Hmm.
So different helmets are...
So that's why a ski helmet will kind of come down pretty far, huh? So it keeps your head from jerking back too much?
That's right, yeah.
Interesting.
So ski helmets have a little bit more protection. They tend to be a little heavier than others, but not by much. My ski helmet weighs just shy of a pound, and it fits in my backpack. So,
So for if you're just recreationally ice skating, it just seems like maybe a thick hat would do you some good, right? Or do you feel like a helmet is really a necessity?
Personally, I would wear a helmet. I usually do. Many of my friends don't. It's not something I'll bring up, but a thick hat is definitely better than nothing. But
yeah, they're tumbling around everywhere. I mean, if you're a very adept skater, you're probably not going to fall down. I guess that's what I'm thinking. I mean, you might, but
yeah, I've played hockey my whole life, and there's lots of stuff happening with hockey, so I always wear a helmet playing hockey, but. Ultimately, it's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good choice to wear a helmet because ice is very hard and unforgiving.
And you can always, even the most expert skater falls now and then. I mean, it's just something that happens, yeah.
Right, if your skates aren't tuned up very well or there's a problem with the ice.
You could hit a bump, yeah, or some kid will come, a dog will come between your legs or something, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
So, it seems like you guys are making some significant progress in creating awareness and getting more people to take this issue seriously. It's been a real movement over the last few years.
Yeah, that's true. Our agency, Alaska Brain Injury Network, recently produced a documentary to help bring awareness to brain injury. Alaska is particularly prone to brain injury, being that many of our communities don't have roads and people commute on off-highway vehicles like ATVs or snow machines. It's very easy to crash. They're open-topped. There's nothing to protect you if it rolls over. We also have many veterans living in this state, and war zone is particularly prone for various types of head injuries, so it's something we need to address as a state, and it is a public health issue.
Yeah. Well, we didn't really get into the motorsports, and in a way, I mean, it's always been obvious you have to wear a helmet when going one of these high-speed machines. I mean, some people don't, but I think the vast majority of people do. And those helmets are sort of another level higher. But as you say, it's still quite a dangerous thing to do from a statistical standpoint.
Yeah, that's true. There's just less safety systems in place. There's some, I know side-by-side vehicles are becoming more popular, and those have a kind of roll cage on them, which I think is a really great safety system.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, you have to stay buckled into those seats, and so that's kind of a two-part system. And many people wear helmets anyway when they're driving those. But motorsport helmets are pretty advanced, but there's new materials that are going into them, like carbon fiber, Kevlar, and other composite materials that make them a bit lighter. There's also new technology involved in them designed to reduce the impact force or the rotational force if you do crash. Because wearing a helmet's a good idea, but if you're moving quickly, your brain inside your skull will continue to move after you crash. And football is like that too. It's just the force of the impact that affects your brain, not just your skull. So
it's the deceleration. It's not just the fact that you're not just protecting your skull, but the fact that you're decelerating in the brain is being squished to the front side of the skull when that deceleration occurs.
Yeah, that's right. And that's particularly notorious in motorsports since you're mm-hmm. moving so quickly. And then you stop moving quickly if you hit something.
Yeah. And then one final thing I want to touch on is maintenance and replacement. You know, you have this feeling with your bike helmet or your ski helmet, just, you know, when you throw it in the garage and then put it on again, and then years may pass, and maybe that helmet doesn't retain the same value it had for protecting you. What guidelines are there for replacement of helmets?
So helmets would have different guidelines. Motorsport helmets are pretty robust, and so they'll have a longer lifespan. Lighter weight helmets, like for climbing and for biking, are designed usually to take one impact, and the impact will crack the helmet, dispersing the force. But I think a good rule of thumb is to try and replace it every 5 years if it's not damaged. And if it looks like it has damage, like a big dent or a crack, then just go ahead and replace it. Usually you can get another one for under $100, and it might seem expensive, but think of it as insurance.
Right. So so the damage, like if you drop your helmet and you're worried you might have damaged it and in such a way that it'll lose its value, you should be able to see the damage, right?
Yeah, if there's a noticeable dent in it, especially with a foam helmet,
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to tell, or it'll seem dubious. Cracks especially, something to keep an eye out for, but...
So a cracked helmet is ridiculous, right? So why wear it?
Right. So some helmets have kind of a thick plastic shell on the mm-hmm. outside. Those tend to be a little more resilient.
Mm-hmm.
But just use your best judgment or take it to a sports store and ask them. They might try and sell you one anyway, but right. it's important to think about their opinion.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Tyler. This has been really interesting and one of those sobering things you don't particularly want to think about, but boy, it's way better to think about it beforehand than after the fact.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, it's best to be err on the side of caution when it comes to head injury. If you or your friends hit your head, plan on heading back and
yeah.
try and get to see a doctor if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Tyler Hislop has been with us from the Alaska Brain Injury Network. And stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer. And I wanted to talk about the Iditarod Trail south of Anchorage and the other really exciting trail stuff that's happening in Chugach National Forest. And I reached out to Alicia King, who is with the National Forest, and brought lots of information about stuff you might not know about that's going to be happening in the future and that's really cool. I've you know, there are cabins down there. There's sort of the Grand View train that you can take. There's Skookum Glacier that folks go to at different times. And a lot of really neat stuff south of Anchorage and much more than I even knew about. So thanks for being here, Alicia.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
So one of the many things I didn't know about was this idea of building a separated trail so you can get through that portage area safely. And I've biked it, and it is terrifying. You don't want to do it on a Friday evening when people are getting out of town. So what's that project all about?
Well, we definitely want to take the terrifying out of that
mm-hmm.
because we recognize that a lot of people use that area, whether you're hooligan fishing during that season or whether you're just finding trails along that Seward Highway section. If you're going to the Alaska Railroad Depot or you're going down to the Wildlife Center or you're visiting Baggage Bogs Visitor Center, that whole area can be quite congested.
Yeah.
And there have been a number of accidents there and actually a couple fatalities. So we do want to take the terrifying
out
of it.
It's just a two-lane drip pavement with fast traffic, and then some, and then narrow shoulders where people are cycling and walking and fishing and parking and doing all this recreational activity.
Exactly.
Yeah, not a good setup.
Right now we're in the process of designing that trail. We've had some public input, and we've been partnering with Alaska DOT, the Department of Transportation. And so we really want to be able to connect people to nature, connect them to the parts of the forest and the Iditarod National Trail. So being able to create that multimodal transportation avenue separate from the highway will allow people to feel safe and have better access to the businesses along that area, as well as the nature opportunities. So it's between mile 75 and mile 82 along that Portage Curve area.
Right. So like about 7 miles of pathway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people are familiar with the Bird to Gird bike trail. I guess it would also be called a multimodal trail because you can do other things on it than bike. Kind of a similar concept?
Similar concept. This will hug the highway, and we'll have some pedestrian areas specifically designed to get people away from the flow of traffic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. So you mentioned the Iditarod Trail. I think most people think of the Iditarod Trail going from Willow to Nome because we think about the race. But in fact, it was a way to get all the way from like Seward to Nome, right? And so it went through our region at one time.
Yes, yes. And we would like to make that connection more of a connection. So actually connecting the kind of missing parts of the trail. So we've got really great folks, partners gathered together. We're talking about exactly what does this entail? You know, how much volunteer help are we going to need? What are the other financial needs that we have? What are the ways that we can engage the communities along that trail? And so this multimodal project along the Portage Curve is one of those ways of kind of helping to connect those dots. And so that's a project that we'll be able to engage the partners as well as people in throughout the communities along those areas. So this year is the 40th anniversary of the National Iditarod Historic Trail. Okay. And so we have some cool things planned. Again, with partners, we're engaging partners, Alaska Trail, the National Iditarod Historic Association. So lots of people coming together to really think about, you know, how do we make this accessible for people and how do we connect the whole trail so that it is a continuous trail again.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a concept planning development thing at this stage. It's not like you're not ready to go sort of go out and move dirt, or in maybe in some parts you are, right, because it's a big project.
Absolutely. In some parts for this project, for the Iditarod 40th anniversary, we are going to be definitely having tools to the ground people to the ground. So thinking about ways that we can improve and engage communities on those parts of the trail that they use. So whether it's brushing trails or actually, you know, making things a little more accessible, easier to find, looking at the trailheads, you know, what kind of information can we give people to let them know the historic value of the trail as well as what's available today as they hike those trails.
Wow, how neat. And how can people get more information about that if they want to get involved?
So they can always come to our website. They can also visit the Iditarod National Trail Association, because we tend to, as partners, you know, we cross pollinate, so to speak, our information.
So you the can association find is like a private nonprofit that supports the trail?
Yes.
I got you.
Yeah. And right. Alaska Trail, also opportunities to volunteers. Alaska Trails will be very engaged in helping us actually gather volunteers. Mm-hmm. And we'll have volunteer days. We are planning to do things June 2nd for National Trail Day and focus on the Iditarod Trail. So keep your eyes open. Visit our website. Visit our Facebook page. Look at our Twitter feed. Lots of ways to find that information.
And we can, and we'll have links to that at outdoorexplorer.org so that people can find it easily.
Yeah. Excellent.
Great. So what's the overall vision here to kind of recreate the entire trail from one end to the other? Or what sort of, obviously that's a big idea, but is that sort of the ultimate goal at some point?
The ultimate goal is to make that connection, but also not only the connection of the trail physically and one from one into another, but to really engage people in the history of the trail and the history of things that happened in that area, and helping make that connection to nature. So that trail is a great opportunity for people to get out, enjoy nature, enjoy the history of the trail that they're walking on, and be able to enjoy what, you know, what we have available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, neat. So what else is going on in the National Forest since I've got you here? I know you've got lots of things going on, and it is it's such a huge area all the way from the Copper River Delta through Prince William Sound, through the Kenai Mountains, and all the way over to the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge that almost, and I think it's like the second biggest in the country. I mean, it's huge. So much out there, so much to do that almost seems funny to say, like, what's going on there, right? It's like, what's going on in a whole state or something?
Yeah. But well, because we're like as big as Texas or something.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you, from the point of view of administration, the people part of it is fairly small compared to the land part of it. So I guess, anyway, so what's happening? What's new at the Chugach National Forest?
So we have lots of things. And I would hesitate to say new.
Uh-huh.
And you're right, we are the second largest forest in the country. The first largest is our sister forest, the Tongass, mm-hmm. here in Alaska. So our 5.4 million acre forest has lots of opportunity for people. And so we always have things geared toward all sorts of audiences. So we'll have events coming up, Fishing Day. We have kids' fishing days, so families can come out, bring their kids, learn how to fish, you know, learn all the kind of the do's and don'ts of fishing, and just have fun, just, mm-hmm. you know, enjoy being out. We'll have, we have coming up in Cordova, the Cordova Shorebird Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And that's happening in May 3rd through the 6th. And so if you want to see really cool shorebirds as they migrate through our area, it's a great stopover point
for
them.
Huge numbers of birds, yeah.
Huge numbers of birds. And so it's a great opportunity to see all of those birds gathering in one place as they migrate from the south to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring migration is pretty magnificent because they're coming up in such large numbers. As they migrate back south in the fall, the numbers are not quite as concentrated.
Right.
So spring is a great opportunity.
Yeah, and it's a great fun town to be in, and as many outdoor activities as any place in Alaska. I mean, it's just concentrated fun down there in Cordova.
Yeah, no, it's excellent. So booking ahead for accommodations is always a wise idea because accommodations fill up quickly. We do have cabins on our forest, lots of opportunity for people to rent those cabins. Coming to rec.gov is the place to be able to reserve your cabin. We have cabins that are in Cordova available during the Shorebird Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So total, we have 41 cabins on our forest, which doesn't seem like a whole lot when you're thinking about, you know, 5.4 million acres. But the cabins are available. There are campsites available as well.
Good idea to reserve those 6 months in advance.
Yes.
although the more remote ones are easier to get. I mean, if you can pay for a float plane or if you can kayak to one, sometimes you can get those easier, whereas the ones like in Western Prince William Sound are just very, very heavily booked.
Yes. It's a good idea to book early.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, explore those options early and book early. So lots of exciting things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have concrete dates right now for some of those activities,
okay.
But keep an eye on our website. We have a calendar on our homepage that actually lists all of the events that we have coming up. So as soon as we know dates, we put them on our calendar. And then you can click on that day on that calendar and find out more information.
Okay, neat.
So anything from, you know, fishing to coming to Bagage Bog's Visitor Center and listening to the young interpretive interns that we have that are coming from all over the country as well as Alaska, mm-hmm. who tell the story of things that are happening in our forest. So whether they talk about salmon or moose or bears or the history of Smokey Bear or other topics that are of interest to the public, they give these great campfire-side stories,
mm-hmm.
and talk about, you know, the history and then the nature of the forest. So
yeah.
Lots of activities.
And if you have kids, you know, so maybe you're the toughest outdoor guy in the world, and you think that all it is just sort of climbing the highest peak. But then when you have kids, you realize going back to that sort of car camping national forest thing is super fun. And I really miss those days when my kids were the age that, you know, you go to a ranger program, sit around a campfire, hear a story, and they would love it. And it doesn't have to be super exotic. And we happen to live right in the middle of it, right? People come from all over the world to do this. We could just do it half an hour down the road. So
right in our backyard.
Yeah. And it's easy to forget about it. It just goes whizzing by on your way down to the Kenai River or something. But It's right there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of cool opportunities. So as you head toward Bagotch Bogs Visitor Center, mm-hmm. there's a really cool wetland walk. Yeah. And I really think it's underutilized.
With the boardwalk there.
Yeah, the boardwalk takes you right out there. And in the springtime, you can see the birds as they're doing their mating dances and mating calls. And there are a lot of opportunities to see really cool nature. Mm-hmm. And if you're really quiet and walk along the pathway, you know, you'll see things that you might not realize were even out there.
Yeah. So great, standing great place and being to bring still, your visitors too. And you don't have to tell them that you like have never been there before, right?
Right.
Even though you live here, right?
Absolutely. There's no shame in not admitting that.
Right.
Yay, great experience. Yeah. Actually, that whole, you know, you're right. It's so close to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very far drive, you know, depending on traffic, of course.
Right.
But there's the opportunity to go see glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
So Byron Glacier Trail,
mm-hmm.
easy walk up into, the first half is pretty easy, pretty mm-hmm. flat, easy terrain. And then as you get a little closer to the glacier, it gets a little more rocky and, you know, mm-hmm. and a little smaller trail. And then it opens up into an area where you can even take a picnic lunch if you wanted to,
yeah.
or, you know, sit on the benches and look at the glacier. You can explore a little closer, get a little closer mm-hmm. to that glacier. But
great for families, and the kids also love the visitor center there, which is really interesting, and just the car camping thing, and you can sort of, obviously not in the wintertime, but you know, summer comes, like Friday afternoon, just throw everybody in the car and go down and have a weekend of camping. And
yeah,
spend,
yeah, yeah. And the Willow Wall Campground mm-hmm. is easily accessible. Some spots are reservable, some are mm-hmm. first come, first serve. There, that's where they have some of the campfire chats.
Right.
So, you know, you bring your family and you're hanging out mm-hmm. and you can go on off on little trails, the Trail of Blue Ice. There's lots of places that you can just go and explore, come back to the campsite, have a nice fun dinner.
S'mores, all that.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And
absolutely.
Enjoy the stories and go out and, you know, do some more hiking in the evening.
Very fun. Well, Alicia, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up here?
So I think we have a lot of opportunity for people to get out and enjoy nature. It's your forest. It's yours to discover. It's yours to enjoy. It's all yours. And we ask that people be aware of their footprint that they leave. So mm-hmm. take trash in or take trash out with you. Don't leave it in the forest. Make sure that you're bear aware. You know, always mindful of you know, knowing before you go. If you go out on trails, let somebody know before you go so that, you know, when they know, somebody knows when you're coming back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So just be mindful and thoughtful. Visit our website. We put alerts and updates to let people know what's going on.
Great.
So come enjoy.
And
it's yours.
So many great trails. We just barely touched the little bit of it, but hopefully got people interested. Well, thank you so much for being here. Alicia King from the Chugach National Forest.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's all for today's show. I also want to thank my earlier guests, Chris Wilson from Ideal Motion Physical Therapy, and Tyler Hislop, Grant and Digital Resource Manager for the Alaska Brain Injury Network. You can find links to those organizations and everything else you hear on our show at outdoorexplorer.org. Just click on today's episode. Producer of Outdoor Explorer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer, lining up our guests, is Hannah Duro. My name is Charles Wolfort. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.